Maple Bala with you here, 720 WGN. Thanks for staying up late with us, everybody. So the pandemic, you know, listen, we already all had probably issues with our kids and how much time they spent on their screens, how much time are they on their phone, their iPad. Now in the last year and a half, we've had all of this remote learning. And our kids are on their devices or on a Chromebook or whatever it is for school, seemingly all day long. So what do we do, and how bad is it that our kids are spending this much screen time? I wanted to bring back an old friend of mine, Dr. Victoria Dunkley. She's an integrative child psychiatrist and the author of Reset Your Child's Brain. Hey, Victoria, how are you?
Hi, Matt. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate it. I know you had mentioned to me last week you were just in Chicago last weekend, right?
I was.
So you're up and traveling, so that's good. You get to see some good weather in Chicago.
Yes, it was very nice.
Well, good. Well, welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for being with us. What's your general take on... Actually, let's start with this. Pretend the pandemic didn't happen. Our kids are on screens probably more than ever before. This is pre-pandemic. Right. How bad is that, and how much are you concerned about the general usage of screen time?
Okay, well, as you know, pre-pandemic... screen time levels were at an all-time high. And what happens is every time a child uses a device and interacts with that device, the nervous system interprets it as a form of stress. It really acts like a stimulant. So the fight or flight hormones get triggered, and it turns out that there's not just one way this happened, but multiple ways, multiple mechanisms that are involved with screen time that trigger stress hormones. So one of those is that the dopamine pathways or the reward pathways are triggered, and once those are repeatedly stimulated, they tend to become worn out, desensitized, and they don't work as well. So the child needs more and more stimulation to stay engaged. Are you there?
Yeah. No, okay. I'm listening
sure
because
got it, cut out.
But is that so? Explain to me a little bit, because our kids do use screens too much. So we'll get into what we can do about that. But even decreasing it, they're still going to use screens a lot these days, right? Especially with the pandemic. Are there, when they're using, are you like, okay, listen, if it's a desktop and they're sitting a little bit away from it and they're sitting up at a desk, that's one thing. Does it kill you way more when you're like, well, my kid was on their phone for an hour and a half in bed last night? I imagine you're like, no, that's not, don't do that.
Right. Yes. Well, okay. So the problem is that all screen time dysregulates the nervous system, including the brain chemistry, the body clock, the hormones, and brain blood flow. Doing it late at night, because it's acting like a stimulant, is even worse. So it's both the total screen time during the day, as well as how much screen time is at night, that impacts sleep. So what happens is the body clock becomes desynchronized because, you know, the screen light mimics the sky, so your brain just thinks it's time to be on the alert. And it also suppresses melatonin, which is a sleep hormone. But melatonin has other jobs, too, in the body. It actually regulates hormones, and it's an anti-inflammatory. So everything just becomes more and more kind of out of whack. So using it for school, the problem is, even if they were just using it for school, you still have the screen light. You're still kind of in this hunched position. You're not getting as much blood flow. You know, the kids are really a lot. We think of it like as a restraint because they're, you know, it's really like physically restraining them.
Does it does it matter though? Like it's a small screen that's close to their eyes, or they're on the couch watching the TV, or they're at a desk and the desktop's a little bit further away. Does that make a difference, or is it? Anytime they're taking it in, they're taking it in.
Well, anytime they're taking it in, they're taking it in. But the interactive screen time, because it's more stimulating, is more dysregulating to the nervous system. It's more addicting. It causes more sleep and cognitive problems. So even though it sounds strange to say, you know, it's actually better to be watching TV from across the room, that's what I see when I try to get kids off screens. When I try to reset their nervous system, if I leave a little bit of TV in, you know, a few hours a week, they seem to be okay. But if I leave a little bit of anything else in that's interactive, it doesn't work the same way.
All right. So I think
the small devices, the handheld mobile devices, seem to be the worst.
I think you just scared a lot of us because you said, well, a couple hours of TV a week is okay.
Yeah. And we're like, well, so that's my protocol. This is my protocol I'm talking about, you know, which is very strict.
It sounds a little strict because I'm guessing that most kids, if they're not on their phones or on a computer for school, are, you know, in front of a TV, and you're saying a few hours a week. And I'm guessing that most kids, especially right now with the remote learning, have to be looking at a screen for a minimum of 6 hours a day.
Right. Well, hopefully the remote learning part is coming to an end.
Right.
So, but, you know, even if there's some going on right now, that makes it even more important to get rid of all the entertainment screen time, the gaming, the social media, anything else, because you're already overloading the system just from the remote learning.
Victoria, do you have a teen or a preteen in your home right now?
I do not. I have a toddler.
Okay. So I think there's about 100,000 people right now going, all right, Victoria, will you call us in 10 years and you tell us how you told that tween that you're only going to have this for an hour or less a day? And I'm not saying that it shouldn't be how it is. I'm just saying that it's just so difficult. You know, our rule has always been the phones don't get to stay in your room. They got to be charged overnight down in the kitchen. You got to get it away from them. And you can't play video games except on the weekends. And we tried to do a lot of that. And I'll admit that since the pandemic hit and the remote learning, we have lost a lot of control over those things. And my sons will tell me that when they go to bed and they lay down, they'll start to just watch a little bit of something. And then you get on TikTok. TikTok is, and I've barely been on TikTok, but I'll tell you right now, from what little I've been on, that is some addictive, ridiculous stuff, because you go on to watch one stupid thing, and before you can even do anything, it ends, and they immediately start another video on you, and then you get sucked into that one. And suddenly, it's 4 hours later, and you're like thinking, well, I was going to get to bed early, and you've just ruined yourself. It's terrible.
Right, right. Well, that's, I mean, well, first you were asking about the, you know, having the kids in my household, and I don't have that situation, thank God, especially during the pandemic. Yeah. But I do work with a lot of teens and young adults and preteens, and so I, you know, I'm really aware of what's going on right now. But we, you know, when you're talking about the TikTok thing, and same with YouTube and everything else, you know, there's hundreds of engineers on the other side of that programming everything. Thing because they want to keep the eyeballs on the screen, right? They call it sticky eyeballs because that's how they make money. So they're extremely skilled at programming to make sure that the person will stay on there. And you can imagine a kid whose brain isn't even fully developed, it is almost impossible for them to put it down. It's impossible for us to put it down. So I think that's why I always go to, you know, going cold turkey because, you know, I've been doing this for almost 20 years now, and it's just like cutting down for a lot of families just doesn't work. You know, if it works for you, great, do it that way. But for a lot of people, it really takes cutting it out altogether, A, to reset the nervous system and all those things that are going out of whack, but B, just to change habits and get, you know, get used to going to bed without having that extra stimulation, get used to reading, you know, from paper, all of those things, you know, with a young person within weeks, they adapt, you know, kids are really adaptable. So parents are like, my kid will never be able to do that. But, you know, I've done this hundreds and hundreds of times and I can tell you they can. It's just, it does help if the whole family does it together. They don't have to all have the same rules, but if you do some kind of, even if it's not a full fast, if you do some kind of program together, that helps a lot, you know, because parents are guilty as well.
Yes, we are. Hold on 1 second. Victoria Dunkley, Dr. Victoria Dunkley, an integrative child psychiatrist. You can follow her on Twitter at Dr. Dunkley, D-U-N-C-K-L-E-Y. The book is Reset Your Child's Brain. Okay, so she's telling us it can be done. How do we do it? And how much do we have to do? She mentioned the adults. Got to pitch in a little too. So what are we talking about? We'll find out next. 720 WGN. Ten 747-720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you until 1 a.m. We're speaking with Dr. Victoria Dunkley, integrative child psychiatrist, author of Reset Your Child's Brain, talking about the idea that we need to reduce that screen time, everybody. And it's worse it was worse than it ever had been. Then we had the pandemic. So you can imagine, you can multiply that to, by a factor of 10 probably, and figure out now that's where we are. So what do we do about it? Dr. Dunkley, you were saying that it's possible. You've seen it done. Kids are very malleable. But sounds like the parents, and I start getting the jitters, my hand shaking, parents have to take part in that too.
Right. And it's really, it's not just that, you know, that the parents are modeling screen behavior. It's also that when the parents are on their screens, there's less eye contact with the child. So, you know, a lot of times you hear about how babies need eye contact for brain development, but that development really continues. It's really a lifelong process. So having that face-to-face conversations, seeing each other's body language, all of that is not just bonding. It really is part of brain development. So that makes children feel more secure. And also, those are those same pathways, actually, that are hijacked by screen time. It's the social reward pathways that are really meant for to keep the kids close to the parents for survival reasons.
Yeah.
So when you spend more time with the kids, and I always recommend doing one-on-one, you know, kind of dates with each parent, if possible, as well as family time and just kind of mixing it up, too. But one thing that's really key is that, you know, whether you're going to do a full screen fast for 4 weeks or whether you're just trying to cut down, is you really have to kind of structure activities. And I always recommend doing like a week or two at a time of making sure there's activities planned for each day, including some things that are, you know, kind of as a reward for the kids so they don't feel like they're being punished, but this is really because you love them and you're trying to optimize their mental health and physical health.
Now, when we talk about doing like a fast, even if it was for just a week, what are we talking about? Because like for a lot of adults with work, it's very tough not to use your laptop or maybe use your phone or whatever it is. So what exactly would you propose as how strong do you go for whatever time you are doing that fast?
Well, in general, for the whole house, you want to do like a screen sweep and get rid of as many devices as possible. A lot of people have tons of old phones and old laptops and iPads and tablets all over the place. So you want to get everything out as much as you can. Then you want to, if you have to use your devices for work, schedule it. So, you know, say your day is done at a certain time in the evening and then you're going to be off. Or if you have to check emails in the evening, you're only going to do it for a certain time. And you set that up with the kids so they know that you're going to do that. And they're allowed to call you out on it because I think that helps kids too. Like they know that everybody's in it together.
Yeah.
It's also helpful just to ask the kids how they feel about the parents' screen time. And if the parents can just, you know, take that in without getting defensive and saying, well, I have to for work, you know. Because kids really get their feelings hurt. Even teenagers, they want their parents' attention.
For sure, for sure. Now, does this include the television?
Well, if you're going to do the actual reset protocol, what I do is I allow, you know, no, I try to eliminate all interactive screen time except for school, which obviously that's more than it used to be. But
yeah.
But I do allow, you know, a couple movies a week or, you know, I say 5 hours a week of TV or movies as long as it's, especially for little kids, you don't want it to be non-animated, kind of slow-paced, kind of older movies, that kind of thing.
So not the quick jump cut, everything like short attention span theater that we have these days. What do you mean by interactive versus passive? Like what is, because I thought you meant like, oh, no interactive, so no video game playing, nothing that you're responding to, but watching a TV show where you're sitting back, not truly interacting, just watching the story, or is that still something that, you know, creates the stimulation?
Yeah, so passive would be viewing like a TV from across the room, so you're not flipping through channels, you're not you're not watching movies on an iPad, and everything, I mean, because as soon as you start doing something on an iPad, I count that as interactive. But yeah, anytime you're interacting at all with the device itself,
okay,
is more stimulating.
And so you're saying if you're going to watch movies, try to make it something a little older, so not the current where something where you sort of have to maybe work a little, have to follow along, have to pay attention.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, if you guys, and it's nice to do it together. But, you know, sometimes parents need a little bit of a break. So if they want to allow 30 minutes of a TV show, you know, to replace what they're getting from the screens, I do allow that. I just want to make sure it's still paced. And a lot of parents just decide to leave the TV out as well because it's just easier.
Yeah.
So every family kind of does it differently, but
you had mentioned,
you know, a little bit of TV or movies is okay. So
yeah,
as long as you get rid of all that stimulating stuff.
You had mentioned the importance of reading stuff that's actually in your hands. What kind of difference does that make? You know, they set the Kindle and the iPads and things up pretty well for reading. You know, it's, I hate, you know, I have to read books all the time for the show, and now I just get a PDF and it does drive me crazy. It's much harder for me to read a book like that, but mm-hmm. you get used to it, and they do a relatively good job of the brightness and things like that. But that is not the same as reading something off a printed page.
That's correct. So there's kind of two aspects to that. One is that we don't process the information the same way in terms of learning. So we tend to do more deep learning, and recall is better, test performance is better, everything's better when you learn from paper, as well as note-taking and things like that versus a computer. But also, if it's something that's easier, like just kind of entertainment reading, we are able to read from a screen, albeit more slowly. But we do also know that things like the Kindle and the e-ink and those things that were supposed to eliminate the sleep issues, they still cause sleep issues. And it's unclear if it's just because the brain has to work harder to process the pixelation and the flat, you know, the 2D surface and all those other things,
mm-hmm.
or what it is. But it does cause sleep issues. And I've had this question from parents, like, you know, when it was just the Kindle that was around, parents would say, well, can we just keep the Kindle because that's what we use for all of our books? But I noticed that even if the Kindle was in there, they would still not fully reset. So,
and is that related to how close to bed they might be reading something on that, or is it accumulation of the day?
Both. So it's the total input as well as how close to bedtime. So we really, you know, it's really about trying to get back to as close to our natural way of living as possible. So, you know, in the old days, people went to bed when the sun went down because they only had candlelight. You know, they might read a little bit and then go to sleep. Or they're working so hard that they were just exhausted and just went to sleep early and woke up at the crack of dawn, you know. So we're, you know, even having light is sort of hard on the nervous system because our body's really not meant to handle that. But if you think about light, like, that seems like nothing compared to all the things that can bombard you from this, you know, from a screen activity.
Yeah. You know, I've always been, we were talking earlier about how the Chicago Tribune's in trouble now that this hedge fund has kind of bought out the whole publishing company. And I never understood why. Yeah, I still subscribe to a newspaper and have it delivered to the house, even though we probably read more stories online than in the paper. I like it to be around my kids. I like my kids to mm-hmm. run into a newspaper, maybe even if it's just picking up the sports section. I think that's important, and I think a study should be done. I would guarantee you, publishing industry, that a study would show that kids are better readers if there's hard copies of a newspaper in their house that they might pick up once in a while. I would bet, at least.
And I would agree.
And now you would say also it's going to be better for their health if they're doing a little bit of this reading of actual paper product versus everything online.
Right. And what we see when we do the screen fast is, and this is some of the favorite testimonials I get when I hear, you know, get these emails from parents saying, my son is reading like he's never been a reader before. I didn't even think this was possible, you know. And it's just, or you hear from teachers saying, this kid just jumped a whole grade level in like 6 weeks in his reading. It's really remarkable. And reading is one of the best predictors of not just academic success, but career success. So it's really, really important. And we know that kids' reading ability has really fallen off, and especially with boys.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another reason to me, to do the full fast, especially over the summer, because it's, you know, once school's out, it's more doable.
Right. Yeah. When you don't have the school stuff.
You have a child who doesn't read, like, this is a way to get them interested again.
Absolutely. The book is called Reset Your Child's Brain with Dr. Victoria Dunkley. You can follow her on Twitter at Dr. Dunkley, Dunckley. It's always great to chat with you. Thank you so much for coming back on the show, and I hope we talk again soon.
Thank you, Matt. Happy to be back.
Thank you. Have a great weekend. Again, follow her at Dr. Dunkley. It's called Reset Your Child's Brain. News Nation News coming up next on 720 WGN.